This is Brian Cambria with news for the Western Slope, Monday, July 1st, 2013. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports conditions in much of western Colorado are riper for wildfires than they've been for most of the past three decades. According to the Sentinel, measurements of what's called energy release components show much of western Colorado's vegetation to be more combustible than it's been for the past 30 years. Pinyon juniper forests at lower elevations are currently under extreme fire danger, the highest level of risk. Lathan Johnson with the Upper Colorado Interagency Fire Management Unit told the Sentinel that higher elevations are slightly less combustible for now, but their risk potential is likely to grow. More than three-quarters of the state remain under extreme, severe, or exceptional drought conditions, compared with only 60% at this time last year. The Denver Post reports that the West Fork Fire Complex grew to more than 96,000 acres over the weekend, though South Fork residents were allowed back into their homes on Friday. Mandatory evacuation orders remain in effect for residents living west of Highway 149 or the Rio Grande River. The fire is now 2% contained. That's 4% contained, and firefighters have reportedly managed to protect nearly 100 homes, though the fire continues to burn through beetle-killed trees in rugged terrain, making it hard for firefighters to combat the flames directly. A spokesman for the Rocky Mountain Type 1 Incident Command Team told the Post that firefighters are just beginning to take offensive measures against the flames. There are 1,500 firefighters working the fire complex. Incident manager Bobby Kitchens told the Post that despite Saturday's small amount of rain, the area is still under extreme drought and people shouldn't become complacent. Weather forecasters say there's a chance for afternoon showers to develop wetting rains in the Wolf Creek Pass area today, but warn that wind and lightning associated with such showers could present their own risks. On a related note, National Weather Service senior forecaster Chris Cuoco said Grand Junction City recorded 1/100th of an inch of rain for the month just ended, well below a normal value for June of 4/500ths of an inch. This is measured at the Grand Junction Regional Airport. Cuoco says don't look for change anytime soon. Hoping to see a weather pattern shift, forecasters are looking ahead and see only the slightest hint of a chance for precipitation July 7th or 8th. Despite the dry June, Grand Junction is still wetter year-to-date compared with last year. The city has recorded 3.42 inches so far this year, still below the normal value of 4.29, but at the same point last year, Grand Junction was almost 3 inches below normal. While warmer, drier conditions in western Colorado this summer have led to increased fire risk, they've also had an effect on wildflowers. KVNF's Chavik Bubenik reports.
Last week, users on the Almanac reported seeing the summer's first sunflowers. One user was surprised to see the flowers blooming already.
My suspicion is that it has to do with how warm the temperatures have been.
David Inouye is a biology professor at the University of Maryland, but spends his summers studying flowers at the Rocky Mountain Biology Lab above Crested Butte.
The major project we're working on now involves looking at how the timing of flowering and the abundance of flowering are changing. We have 40 years of data already, and that's allowed us to get some idea of what the consequences of the changing environment are in terms of how flowering is being affected and also how some of the animals, like pollinators, that interact with those flowers are being affected.
He says the earlier-than-usual sight of sunflowers and other wildflowers is indeed most likely due to this year's warmer temperatures.
Plants had a pretty early start to the growing season this year because the snow melted relatively early, and then it's been warm since then, so the plants have developed pretty quickly.
Another Almanac user said he watched a sunflower rapidly grow 3.5 inches in 24 hours.
That would also be affected by the warmer weather, so plant growth would be affected by a combination of temperature and moisture. And so if they're getting the moisture that they need, for instance, if somebody's watering a sunflower in their garden, those warmer temperatures will result in quicker growth.
The earlier snow melt and hot, dry weather of late is perhaps cause for some alarm, But the sight of sunflowers is arguably a welcome distraction from the weather's other byproduct, wildfires. For IC Change and thealmanac.org, I'm Travis Bubinick.
IC Change is a crowdsourced reporting project with KVNF that draws on community observations about seasonal shifts in the weather. Have you seen changes this week? You can share your observations at thealmanac.org and thereby be a part of two-way radio. A century ago, the small town of Austin rivaled Delta as the county seat, and there were enough kids there to merit a school. From 1904 to 1966, students attended grades 1 through 8 in Austin's five-room Fairview School before going on to Delta High School. For the past 27 years, generations of former Fairview students have met for an annual reunion. This year's reunion took place on Saturday with a breakfast get-together at the Gunnison River Pleasure Park. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Fairview had only four rooms for 8 grades, plus a music room. With classes ranging from single digits to a dozen or so, the school was an intimate community. Ray Drysdale, one of 13 in the class of 1942, is the chief organizer of the reunions, and he relishes the feelings evoked by these events.
Well, I think it's a unique vehicle in which you can revisit the past, and if you got a good past to revisit. I had an ideal. I had a childhood of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. It was a childhood where we were inventive. All of the stuff we did was not commercial. It was what we invented, whether it's shooting rubber guns at each other to getting in apricot fights or overripe apricot fights, corn cob fights.
Dean Weaver, who graduated from Fairview in 1937, will be 90 this year. When Ray invited people to stroll down memory lane, Dean had this story.
We would go in the drugstore to get an ice cream cone. And who was the owner of it?
Watts.
Yeah.
Watts.
You know, he just had one arm, but he could take that cone, ice cream cone, and hold it under his arm and then fill it. Boy, was that good ice cream.
This year, the featured group was the Dixon family. Charles and Ruth Dixon arrived in Austin in the early 1900s.
Charles was instrumental in founding Orchard City and was a charter member of the Orchard City Council. The orchards tell of the successful fruit growing started by Charles and then carried on by his son, Hover. The fruit growers of the area later built a cooperative packing shed in Austin right on the railroad tracks, and everybody used that. Guy, Charles's younger brother, and his first wife, Lillian, were responsible in getting potable water to the Orchard City area, and that's the best water in the world.
Larry Dixon attended Fairview from 1953 to 1961.
I was the fourth of my siblings to go to school there. My father graduated, I believe, in 1921. My mother taught school there, and all of my siblings went to school there. We had a dirt baseball field, and that was the sport of the year. From fall to spring, it was baseball. Every recess, we had a big bell that Mr. Potarf, our principal, rang. And he did have a paddle, and he did use that. I don't remember that I was a receiver of that, but I do remember seeing it. It was displayed properly behind his desk.
Greta Hanstrom's book, Slates, Chalk, and Inkwells, features Austin's Fairview as one of 70 schools in the area that once offered a rural elementary education.
Well, it's amazing there's still a lot of the buildings still standing and being used as dwellings or other things, you know. And part of the Austin School is still existing, and it's part of a house.
After the quilt raffle had been won, after all the bouquets and displays had been given out and the stories were still being told, Ray Drysdale summed up the past and present.
It was a family. It's much like the camaraderie you're seeing here right now.
For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
Two new Colorado gun regulations go into effect today, July 1st, a response from lawmakers to last year's mass shootings at an Aurora movie theater and at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. The laws have some gun dealers concerned, as KVNF's Travis Bubenik reports.
House Bills 1224 and 1229 together ban high-capacity magazines and call for background checks on all gun transfers in the state, which may sound simple, but for some gun dealers and law enforcement officials, the bill's wording is proving difficult to understand, and its ability to even be enforced is being questioned.
This is a muzzle-loading gun. It is not considered an antique because it is a more modern. It was made in the 1950s, and so I would do a background check on this one, even though...
Tim Gonzalez is the owner and operator of Backcountry Goods Trading in Hotchkiss. He says he spends a lot of time keeping up to date with changing gun regulations.
Every day, in and out, we're figuring out what new rules do we have to abide by, or what old rules have we been breaking that we need to correct.
He says the new laws won't really affect him when it comes to background checks. He already performs them on every weapon he sells. The high-capacity ban, however, will take some of his products off the shelf, though he's not sure to what extent. In addition to banning magazines built to hold over 15 rounds, a section of HB 1224 makes it illegal to possess any device that can be readily converted to hold more than 15. Gonzalez says that language is a bit vague and leaves him confused about what exactly is now illegal to sell.
Almost every semi-automatic gun that has ever been made has been made so it can be disassembled, cleaned, maintained, so that it's a safer, more effective gun. But because it's been able to be disassembled, you can also add an extension to it. So that means that most semi-automatic guns may possibly be considered illegal after Monday.
Well, the international side of things overall account for probably 90% of our sales.
Michael Canays, owner of European Target Shooting Supplies, exports guns from his shop in Hotchkiss to countries like Norway, Finland, and the UK. He says the high-capacity ban could affect about 30% of his sales, most of which are aimed at sports shooters who tend to favor large magazines.
Technically, with these new laws, we can't even be sent magazines over 15 rounds or firearms that have that kind of a magazine in it. In terms of our international sales, that's going to encroach quite a bit there, because a lot of countries around the world, a lot of them do not have restrictions on capacity of the magazine.
Since most of his guns come directly from wholesalers and then get transferred overseas, he's hoping to get an exemption from the state.
So far, we haven't had a whole lot of cooperation on that respect. Guidance is not given.
Like Gonzalez, Canays says the state's left it up to him to figure out the law's nuances. Delta County Sheriff Fred McKee agrees.
We're a little bit disappointed because they are very confusing statutes with not a lot of guidance in how they should be enforced, or even if they're really enforceable.
McKee is one of more than 50 Colorado sheriffs who filed a lawsuit against the state, claiming the new laws are a violation of Second Amendment rights. The suit remains in the motion stage, with a court hearing set for early July. In the meantime, enforcement isn't likely to proceed quickly.
Exactly how we're going to enforce them, or if, is still in the air. We haven't put out any guidelines for our deputies. So probably if we saw something that we were concerned about, we would get in contact with the district attorney and find out maybe how they wanted us to proceed.
Canays put it more frankly.
I don't think that local law enforcement around here even, in all honesty, care.
As dealers like Canays and Gonzalez begin the process of adapting to the new laws, one thing remains clear. Public opposition is hardly settled. Some 5,000 people attended a Farewell to Arms event in Glendale on Saturday, where firearms dealer Magpul gave away nearly 1,530-round magazines. Magpul has announced plans to leave the state, a move Gonzalez has considered as well.
Our family and our business has looked at possibly even moving to Texas, where the gun laws are more friendly, and we can actually run a successful business there.
For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubenik.
Thus concludes today's newscast. Happy Canada Day. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria. Good day, eh?